I guess the music ended. Time to start. Hello. All right. Thank you for sticking with us through the end of the day here. Appreciate you guys continuing to listen and attend our session. My name is Tim Heuer. I'm one of the program managers on the Windows UI development platform. With me today is my esteemed colleague, Ashish Shetty, and we're here to continue to talk about the message about great experiences, Windows UI platform, and the Fluent design system.
Right. And before we get started, I do want to level set that this is going to be kind of a level 200-ish talk, so we're going to do a very broad overview over a lot of topics, hopefully some recaps from things that you've seen in the keynote today, and in Paul and James's session for those that I've attended in there. We'll try to keep the overlaps to a minimum. And then we'll call out some other sessions that are happening elsewhere in the conference today and tomorrow, and pre-recorded sessions that go into much more detail on the concepts that we're going to cover today.
Yeah, it's really important that Fluent is a real important part of our UI platform, so we want to make sure that we're hammering the message home to you. Okay. On that note, think about you and we as consumers of technology and just stuff around us, and what is a great experience. We all love great experiences. We get delighted by great experiences. And it's not just about software. Think about the world physical, the car that you love to drive. For me, it's the bike that I love to ride. But it is about apps, too, right? We are geeks at heart. Think about the apps that you continue to use, the ones you don't delete, and that you continue to go back to. And maybe it's your banking app because you have to check your balance, but not that one. Think of the other ones that you want to go use and things. And why do you continue to go use them? And you do that because they're great experiences. We love great experiences. So let's level set again and take a look at some aspects of great experiences through a video here. So it's pretty awesome. When you think about experiences, you can see that it's not just about the software. It's about the physical to the virtual worlds.
All right. Now, Tim and I have been in the UI platform business for over a decade, going 12, 13 years now. Since WPF, we did a few versions of Silverlight. We started the Skunkworks project called Project Jupiter, which ended up becoming the new XAML platform in Windows. We've gone on to build up the control set in Windows, the visual layer in Windows, and then retrofit each other to create this blazing fast UI platform in Windows that is now capable of embodying the needs of the Fluent design language. Now, we've had our share of hits over the years, and we've had more than a few duds, right?
Couple.
All right, couple. So anytime we've had something that worked, something that we consider a hit, we found that we've struck the right balance across the needs of the distinct audiences for the UI platform. On the one hand, users that are consumers or information workers in enterprises. On the other hand, developers, right? From a consumer and enterprise worker perspective, there are distinct needs that we've delivered, we've homed in on. Consumers, we're aiming for more engagement. For information workers, we're aiming for more productivity. But what does that really mean, right? As an end user, I must feel that everything has a purpose in the user experience. Everything keeps me immersed. I must feel like I am completely in control, that things react intuitively to my input, that they're rapid, repeatable, reversible. I feel like the UX is centered around my needs. Now, as an enterprise worker myself, I care about performance. I have a very limited attention span, and so I want great UX that optimizes for my very limited attention span by keeping things fluid and retaining my context across transitions, across micro interruptions that happen in all of my interactions with software.
but we're also all developers in the room. And so it's really important that we are able to strike that balance as developers and being able to achieve those great experiences through a balance that allows us to be productive as developers at a low cost, but delivering the maximum ROI. We all know, how many times have you seen great designs from your designers and comps that you know are just going to take eons to achieve, and so the ROI ends up not being there, but we've failed in the balance of delivering a great experience. So as developers, we want to make sure that the possibilities are limitless and you feel like you actually can create anything that is handed to you. But it's easy to build, and it's low cost and low risk as well. Now, we've often talked about our platform as a layered platform of technology. We've shown this slide before in previous presentations. There's distinct layers that we like to talk about in the UI platform. At the lowest level, you have what I call the Direct Star technologies. Primarily for UI, that's DirectX. And everything builds on that core foundation. The next two layers up are the composition layer, the compositor layer, and then the highest level in the UI framework, where the controls sit. Now, we're going to focus our attention on the investments in these top two layers and not talk about DirectX today. In those layers, we like to think of the UI platform as progression. And so you've heard James and Paul, if you were in the previous session, talk a lot about the possible to easy spectrum. And we like to keep this in our team because it's not this is about a journey. There is no end to UI design. It always evolves and it always changes. So each new innovation, we like to think about it as bringing it along the way and learning along the way. So we always start with what's the possible and bringing it into the core platform. It may not be simple to use. You could think of possible being actually DirectX as an example. Then we level it up and make sure that we have concepts that are easy to do and build up. And this is the visual layer system. And it, you know, things become easier. The APIs start making more sense. But what we really want to achieve for you as developers is default. We want you to be able to just use controls and use fundamentals that embody the codification of all of these possible and easy concepts. And we do that in things like the Fluent Design System and our common controls.
Now, I want to briefly focus on this pyramid here. This is our equivalent of the food pyramid, if you will. These are our foundational items. These are the building blocks that we consider are essential for great user experiences. And so the bottom two rungs in this pyramid are your basics. These are the building blocks that make for functional and consistent experiences that run across the diversity of Windows device form factors and dimensions. Above that, you have these elements that make for more personal experiences. These are the things that allow for differentiation based on your brand, based on the audience's needs pertinent in your application, and based on the device context on which your application is used. Now, we're on this multi-release journey with our investments in the user interface platform. And we're making some very significant investments in this area, up and down this pyramid. So let's take a really quick look at the kind of examples that are happening. You'll hear about this in our talk and in talks elsewhere in this conference. But for the rest of this hour, we're going to cherry pick a handful of items from that pyramid and then go really deep and then give you a pretty good perspective on our investments in UI. Let's first start with real-world user interfaces. Now, with the Fluent Design System, we're drawing inspiration from the real world and from nature particularly. Let's just say that we know from our own personal experience that flat UI can be flat and boring. You guys agree? All right, I see some hands. All right, so we've invested in a few core areas, and this list will grow over time. So for now, we're really excited about lighting, materials and effects, shapes and micro animations are a little more futuristic. We'll talk to you about it there. We think about drawing on these real-world concepts in ways that make sense, not just for the sake that these are real-world concepts. In the end, this is a digital medium we're talking about. So the goal is really to refine the sense of immersion that our users feel in our experiences, to reduce their learning curves, and make it an overall satisfying experience, whether it's on the nth time, just as it was satisfying on the first time that they were using your app, right? And so lighting, materials, effects, these things, they're investments that are real and available in builds today and will be in successive insider builds. And we'd love for you to participate, play with it, and give us feedback on. With shapes and micro animations, we think these allow for serious fun. So these are not necessarily real world artifacts, but these are possible only in the digital medium. And we'll go into a little bit more detail shortly. Let's first start with lighting, right? In the keynote, those of you saw Joe Belfiore introduce the Fluent Design System, he called out lighting as a way that as a way of drawing our attention, as a way to inform, to introduce clarity, and to provide wayfinding. Right? Tim and I, have thought about the application of lighting in apps, and then we found in media apps, for instance, lighting plays a very critical role in introducing a mood or accentuating a mood. Now, there are two key areas that Paul mentioned about lighting. Let me drill into them in a little bit more detail. Where lighting really helps and is a critical ingredient in attaining a certain goal. The first of which is focusing the user's attention. And this is about anchoring the user to the most important item in a collection. Maybe this is a really dense UI and you want to show the one item that they, you want them to gravitate to, towards. Maybe that is the one that is currently actionable. Maybe it's the one that popped up anew in a list where everything else was static. Lighting is a subtle way of highlighting items that have this sort of significance. Another thing, another use case for lighting is about disclosing contextual actions. And Paul showed you reveal, and reveal essentially sits in this bucket where you could have a grid-based design, really dense UI, a lot of buttons in there, but you don't need to show the seams around your controls to the user, except when those seams really matter, except when the boundaries of those controls are to be surfaced to the user, and reveal does a really good job with that. Now, as we vetted a bunch of these concepts in investing in the UI platform, we've made sure that these concepts apply universally to our customers. And so they apply as well in enterprise applications as they do in consumer application. And there is a critical UX design test for us at Microsoft. Now, with the anniversary update, the visual layer supports several different kinds of lights powered by the scene light effect. Since then, we've introduced in the creators update this notion of a XAML light, where you could essentially any brush that is in your user interface that is lit by the XAML light, any UI elements that have this brush are affected by the XAML light. That's essentially the concept. So it helps you build really custom experiences in your application. If the default, the things like reveal, et cetera, do not work for your needs, there's ways for you to customize. That's essentially the notion here. And we're progressing along into packaging these things that are possible into these concepts that work for you by default. And reveal is a really great example. But then I'm sure you've heard about Reveal, you're sold on the value of Reveal. Maybe you even get to play with Reveal in your application. What I do want to highlight to you is a couple things. This graph that you see on the right-hand side indicates the complex set of moving parts that make up Reveal. Now, all of this complexity is hidden to you, hidden from you, and surfaced by this really simple way in which you can use Reveal in your application. All you need is this one additional line of code. Maybe the target of the Reveal already exists in your application, in which case all you need is this one additional style that you apply to the target, the button in this example. And all of the complexity behind the scenes is abstracted away, and you're given real high performance feedback on your mouse hover experiences, the kind of performance that you expect in these interactions. Next, let's talk about materials and effects. Now, acrylic is the first among the materials that we'll be introducing into the Windows UI palette, but there will be several more. And each of these they're not just visual artifacts, or they'll not just be visual artifacts. We're thinking of introducing materials that have significance to you in interaction, in the ways you do input, in sounds, in haptics. There's a lot of research going on in Microsoft to identify this set, and we'll only introduce to you those materials that we think are really, really purposeful and generally usable across the broad cross-section of applications. Now, I'm sure you're itching to go behind the scenes to see how acrylic works, right? So here's essentially the set of moving parts in acrylic. You'll notice that it's composed of a bunch of effects, Gaussian blurs, tint, noise assets, etc. Now, if you're focusing at the very back of acrylic, you'll see that it's sampling from the background. What this means is that if the target of the acrylic is on your desktop, you have an option to sample from the desktop, which means it peeks through to the desktop wallpaper, the windows underneath, et cetera. But you also have the option of having an in-app acrylic because you want your pop-up menus, for instance, within your application to have acrylic and then bleed through to the background of your application. These are possible. Now, acrylic is just a specific example of a very general concept that we're introducing, and I'm really, really excited about that. It's this concept of custom brushes in XAML. And those allow, just like with Reveal, acrylic to be introduced into your application with just a simple property update into your existing UI. And this is really big for us. We don't want you to go make radical changes to your existing application. We want you to have as much of your existing code reused and have incremental evolution in your apps. That's really critical.
So I think it's important to notice that there's, between Reveal and acrylic, there's actually a complex effect graph that is actually happening behind the scenes, and we're simplifying it through you in a set of styleable brushes. Right. But Ashish, like, is acrylic the only thing that we can create?
Well, I'm glad you asked. You can create whatever your heart desires. So with this custom brushes and XAML concept that we're introducing, all you need to do is subclass the XAML composition base brush. And in this case, I'm creating an effect, image effect brush. There, I can use just about any feature. In fact, you can use all the features that are in the visual layer, all of the effects, all of the materials that the visual layer exposes to you, and make a brush out of it. Now, those that have used brushes in XAML know that any thing that can be painted by a brush. Typically, you'd use a solid color brush to paint things. Sometimes you'd use images. But now you could use any custom artifact to paint your XAML UI. And so this gives you a scale where the stock controls provide you all of the building blocks that we think occur or should exist in common cases, but then you may have specific cases for your brand, your users, your devices, and then these are the extensibility points that make those things possible for you to achieve. Right, there's a talk tomorrow morning, which I really, really strongly encourage you to attend. Lindsay Kubasik and Kelly Renner are going to go into much more detail on some of the innovations we're doing in the visual layer, and they're going to give you a 400-level talk, talking through a bunch of really critical concepts that underpin the Fluent design system. All right, so time for a demo.
So while Ashish is bringing that up, yeah, I highly recommend tuning into Lindsay's and Kelly's. So they're going to focus on that possible end of the spectrum and actually look at what we call a material editor that will actually show you how you can build up those different layers that encapsulate effectively what becomes a XAML brush that you can paint.
All right. So now, how many here attended the talk just in the hour prior that James and Paul did? Quite a few of you. Well, thank you for staying in. What I'm going to do is I'm going to continue where James left off on a couple scenarios. Now, he showed you the power of acrylic in the application. It really, really looked cool. One of the things I'm going to focus on is customizability in acrylic. And so let's first run the app with the stock acrylic just to give you a sense for what it looks like. It's building.
James took all the Panos gods, so.
Yeah, we're working on a relatively weaker machine.
we got the gerbils.
Okay, let's resize. so we can fit everything in. All right. Now, this is a fairly standard application, but at this stage. And what you're seeing is acrylic on the navigation pane on the left. And I'm going to collapse it, resize. Try to show you a couple states here. Sorry if this machine cooperates.
Anchoring it too high.
Yeah. There you go. So here you're seeing the in-app acrylic aspect, and then by maximizing it, you're going to see the desktop background bleed through. You might see my wonderful cat. Alrighty. So one of the things we want to do now is go customize the stock acrylic. The stock acrylic actually is really thoughtfully done by our design team and our engineering teams. Let me rattle you through a couple artifacts that I personally find interesting. The text that you see, even though the acrylic has a blur applied to it and it's sampling from the background, you see the text is really crisp. And this is because we've done a bunch of studies to make sure that the contrast ratio of the text is appropriate for common usages. So that way, you do not have to think about using acrylic, whatever dynamic background you may have. You may have a media file playing in the background, which means it's dynamically changing on a per-frame basis, but your text in the foreground is still visible. This is important. Even though acrylic is used in supporting UI, that is not the hero in the application at this point on this view. The hero is on the right side, right? It's all the UI that you want to invite your users to engage with. The acrylic is on the thing that exists as, you know, a supporting spine. Now, regardless, if you notice the SVG file at the top that says buildcast has a couple tones in it, and it's got this shade of blue that our design team really wants us to go implement in the application. So what I'm going to do is going to go into the navigation view and see if, how to get that hooked up. All right. So. In my XAML file, it's a fairly straightforward navigation view that James showed you earlier. Now, I do have a theme file that James has graciously created for me, and I've inserted the specific color that the design team wanted me to put in. Now, there's a feature in XAML that probably many of you may not know about. It's about allowing you as a developer to override or redefine a particular style in XAML, and we're going to take advantage of that really powerful feature. And so in my branded XAML theme, I'm going to override the two styles that the navigation view depends on, and one of them, in its expanded view, you notice it was using the host backdrop brush, and its default view, it was using the in-app backdrop brush. What I'm going to do is I'm going to indicate that the tint color that our design team has created for us, that's that shade of blue, be used, and then that be the fallback color as well, should acrylic be turned off, right? And so what we're going to do is run the application.
So what Ashish did there was by providing the same key name as what's provided in the framework, the system at startup will look for those and basically say, you've provided a new definition for me. I'm going to go use that. So there's no need to actually re-template the navigation view, find that part, and supply your own brush, and then lose all the capabilities of things that we deliver in the platform. Just be able to identify the brush you want to override and set that definition using the same key name. And we have a documentation of all the system brushes that are available to you to override.
All right. So you see that shade of blue now show up in the application after the update. Now, just to prove that that is not some fakery going on, I'm going to change it over to one of our devs' favorite colors, chartreuse, and then see how the app reacts this time around. There you go. It's showing up. There is no accounting for taste, and there is no accounting for the fact that our devs don't account for the contrast ratio as well. A chartreuse, along with the white foreground text, you know, isn't at all that readable as the stock acrylic or some of the tints that our design team came up with. So the lesson here is you could customize it, but be cognizant of some of the corner cases here. There may be pitfalls. There aren't a lot, but there are things that really matter to your user that you want to get across while balancing the needs of your brand. Cool. All right, we'll switch over to...
So next, let's talk about shapes.
Yeah.
So as you may have heard, what Ashish said was, if anyone clued in on that, he said, notice the SVG image at the top. So we've heard your feedback about supporting SVG in XAML. And as of the creators update, we now support SVG in XAML image element using the secure static mode of SVG. And so that, yeah.
Yeah, baby.
So by that applause, we know that that's not the end game. We know that people want more. And so secure static mode is exactly kind of what it sounds like. So you can get great performance of rendering of SVG assets at scale, at whatever you need to display them at, and we continue to re-raster at the best resolution. But we've heard that people want to be able to animate that as well. So one of the things that we're, and the static SVG looks great for iconography. We want to move that needle a little bit further and help that iconography come to life and be more playful. So we're investing and looking at, in the future, at animatable vector graphics. So we've heard that feedback. Thank you.
Popular feature.
So the animatable graphics is not just about iconography, though. These are things that we think about in micro animations that bring very purposefulness to animations and to some scenes that could be static in nature. So if you look at this exploration that we're doing around data visualization, we could certainly do a chart over time that someone clicks through and as the lines just kind of pop and move. But by using subtle micro animations, we're able to provide dare I say, even a playful aspect in this kind of enterprise type data visualization here. And these are the type of situations that we're exploring now that we want to make sure we light up. Now, it's important for us that we deliver these things at scale as well. We know that our system runs on devices as small as IoT devices and as large as the Surface Hub machines and the new Xboxes with the high performance capabilities. So we need to be able to deliver high performance in all of these aspects. We're also cognizant that you guys are the creators, and we need to go where you are creating these animations and also support the frameworks that you're using to create them, like things like Lottie. Now, one of the things that we want to do is make sure that we have a great tooling story where people are creating this type of art and this type of vector. So we're looking to work with existing vendors for creation tools, much like Paul and Bo showed, working with Adobe XD and kind of the sticker sheets that are provided. We think of that partnership along with that ecosystem to be able to go where people are creating this type of UI. So you're going to see these links throughout our deck. This is an area of future innovation, and we want your participation in kind of the feedback in this area. So feel free to go and help us and inform us on these type of investments today and how we should go about them and help us learn from your scenarios as well.
All right, we covered lighting, we covered materials and effects. Both of these are real and available in builds today and in successive insider builds. And Tim talked about shapes, which we're very, very eagerly interested in, working hard on making real, but that'll take a little bit of time before that transpires. Should we move on to the next section?
Yep.
All right, so next up, let's talk about natural motion. Now, we want our apps to be more than just pretty portraits. We want users to love the interactions within our application. They take delight in the smallest of details that exist in our applications. Right? For our users, natural feeling motion makes them more productive. It focuses their attention on what is most important. It increases their confidence, and it helps retain context. Right. It also provides meaning and purpose. Like if you take the pull to refresh scenario, for instance, when you see that motion, the animation happening while you're pulling to refresh, it's giving you a visual cue that the list is fetching new data. Right. Likewise, when you're adding, deleting, or reordering items within a list, the animations that happen that take the list item from its old position to its new state, they have a purpose in instilling the confidence in your user that the system is reacting directly to their input and something meaningful is happening. And that is why natural motion is really critical. But moreover, natural motion creates an emotional connection between your users and your applications. And we want more of that. We want more moments littered across, not just one aha kind of moment within your application, because that's essentially the thing that will keep your users engaged within your application and keep them coming back again and again, right? So we are building a system where motion is pervasive and purposeful. And I'm going to belabor this point a little bit. Our bar requires motion to be purposeful. We just don't want things moving around. We're not interested in the bells and whistles. That's not what Fluent Design System's about. Which is why we're applying a rigorous filter, because purposefulness has a variance when you apply them across devices. Something that seems very purposeful in a control on the phone may be great on the phone, but may not apply on the desktop, in a different use case. That doesn't mean we're going for least common denominator, but the principle still holds. And so as a result, with these investments in natural motion, all developers benefit, even those that do nothing with natural motion to those that actually work hard in creating choreographed UI in their application. We're going to see a few examples of those. And so these are the three pillars that we're currently working on for natural motion: seamless transitions, dynamic motion, and something futuristic that we'll talk about shortly around semantic animations. So first, let's set up some context, because I want to instill in you the need for natural motion, the need for motion in particular. Now, if you take this hypothetical podcast app that we were inspired by when we built Buildcast, navigating from the master page, that is the list of feeds, into the details page is a really hard, jumpy, choppy kind of feeling, right? And this is like navigating across web pages in the 1990s, right? We can really do better. And we are doing better.
Are we adding marquee tags?
No, we're keeping that out. Right. We're building a system that aims to keep our users engaged and feeling productive. So that's essentially what we're doing. And so a user experience that guides the user's eye as things move across the screen is going to be far more efficient at keeping them engaged than one that does not. Right? That's essentially the thesis. Because as a user, like I said, my attention is a scarce resource. I have a limited attention span. And these transitions from state to state tend to become drop-off points. Those are the junctures where I move off from the app and go into some other thing that may be a good temporary distraction. And we don't want that happening in your applications. And so the real question is, can we make these cinematic experiences possible with minimal code? What do you think? All right. Yeah. I see nodding heads, so the answer is yes. All right, so James showed you quite a few of these delightful little bits in the Buildcast app, and we're going to follow that same recipe shortly when we jump into demos. But first, let's focus on the theory. Now, with implicit animations on show and hide, you can create really beautiful transitions in your applications, and they're really, really simple to do. Those are effectively the lines of codes that you have to write. You don't have to take my word for it. I will show you in a demo quickly. Next, with connected animations, you can retain user context across cognitive drop-off points, and you can build really choreographed UI. So James showed the image moving from the master page into the details page. We're going to jump into that, look at it a little more closely, and look at what the moving parts are. But we're also going to choreograph some of the other elements that happen. You see, between page transitions, the from page is getting dismissed, so it's going away. And we can make that act of the page going away also a little bit more delightful. And the to page is coming into view. But the artifacts in the to page just seem to pop. There are other treatments that we could use to make sure that those look graceful. In the end, with little bits of detail, little bits of code here and there, if you can get really cinematic experiences, your users really will feel engaged with your application. So let's jump into a demo. Now, just to set a baseline, this is what the app looks like. When I click on the image there, it just abruptly navigates to the new page. kind of like the web page navigation from the 90s that, that I mentioned. That's something I want to fix. And then there's opportunities on this two page as well for me to fix, because you see there's a header there that's enclosing the image of the the build conference feed, along with the text and the buttons that accompany it. We could do something with these artifacts. So let's get started on that. All right, so first, you notice that I went in from the grid view, on the landing page, right? That's my branded homepage. Here's the grid view, and here's the item click that results in that navigate operation happening. Let's look at what it's doing. It's fairly basic. It's remembering what the item was clicked because it needs to persist it for later use. But then the interesting part here is the navigate. What I'm going to do is I have this code commented out right now, just for convenience purposes, and I'm going to uncomment it. And so basically, as James mentioned, we've rigged up our collection controls in the UI platform with sentience around connected animations. So the grid view knows how connected animations work and makes it easier for you to use them. All you've got to specify is some identifier, and this is just some text. It could be foo, as long as it's the same text on the landing page as well. This is the grid view item that was clicked. And in that item's item template, we're going to go into that really shortly here, is an element which has been given the name image. That's this guy, right? And what we're trying to do is take that item and then tell the system, I want you to seamlessly transition this item in as the other page comes into view, and then have it fall into place in its new position in the other page. All right, now let's look at the details page. Save that. Now, on the details page, that was the header that I mentioned that encloses the image. On this page, the image is called pod image. Now, you can call your images whatever. They don't have to have the same name across pages. The trick here is in that image's image opened, event handler, the trick is to tell the system that this is where you want to complete the connected animation. So using the same identifier there, and then I'm going to start the animation. So let's revisit this. On the starting page, you're telling the home grid, use this identifier, take this item, and from that item's data template, take this element, animate it across. There's some more operations I'm doing that I'm going to come back to shortly. And then on the details page, taking the same item, and then you're going to animate it. Save this. Let's run it. Fingers crossed. Okay, here comes our grid view. Let's take that same item. I'm going to tap on it. Is that better? All right, glad. Okay. We're not going to end there. Remember I mentioned choreographed UI. I said a higher bar, not connected animations. So connected animations are just one component of choreographed UI. Now, you're going to help me out with this. So what we're going to do is take some other elements that exist on the details page, and then make sure that those are animated in concert as well. And how are we going to do that? We're going to do that by using this notion of implicit show hide animations. So I have a handy piece of code lying here, and I'm going to explain it as soon as I uncomment it. So implicit show and hide animations implicit animations differ from explicit animations in that in explicit animations, you're providing a certain time, and that time is the driver. You're creating a keyframe, and you're saying, go from this state to that state over this duration, use this easing curve or whatever. That's explicit animation. In implicit animations, you're telling the system, if this property changes, run an animation in this manner. And the system just does that. As in, you don't have to trigger the property change. Anytime that changes ambiently, the system's doing it. And this is being done real time in the compositor. So whatever your app may be doing on the UI thread, even if you're running a pretty high latency networking call and then your UI thread is blocked, all of your animations will still work. And that is the promise of what we're doing in Windows UI today. Because your users will then feel that your app is still responsive as this is happening. Now, with this implicit show animation, what we're going to do is we're going to take advantage of the fact that that header at the top could slide into view while that page shows. And from the banded, from the source page, as it gets dismissed, I want to change the opacity of the source page over 0.4 seconds here and change it from visible to invisible, to zero. Okay, let's go to the destination page. Likewise, I have this block to configure animations. And then really quickly, let me, it's called from the constructor of the page. And within that block, I'm going to indicate to the framework that I'm going to do a translate animation. And that allows me to create an animation that affects the vertical offset. Now, over 0.6 seconds, I am animating this header from being off screen by negative 450 pixels into coming into its on-screen position, right? Let's save and give it a whirl. You see that? Let's try that again. There's something going on, isn't there, Tim? You see some flashing. I think we can fix that. So what's happening is we've done all the things that we wanted to choreograph the animation. However, when the animation on the destination page ends, it is not completely synchronized with the loading of the image. So they're mismatched. Sometimes the image loads, so you see a flash, but the animation hasn't ended. That's really easy to fix. So what we're going to do is tell the framework to hide the image by default, and then once the animation is done, we're going to unhide it. So we're going to just play around with the visibility of the image. Okay. So let's go to the two things that we're currently animating. That's our image. And since the text around the image is also subject to animation through an implicit show operation, let's make sure that in markup, we're going to default it to being collapsed. And then in code behind, when that image has been decoded, we're going to make it visible. Should work this time around, huh? There you go. That wasn't very hard at all, huh? Thank you.
So that was an example of the of choreographing the connected plus these implicit animations here.
All right. Sorry, we had a little bit of a glitch here. All right, so it's already possible for you to create accurate motion that is tied to input, where animations stick to the finger. This is the thing in Windows today. So just like animations can be affected by time, what we've introduced in recent Windows releases is animations that are tied to input. And that is the basis for all of our list scrolling scenarios. That's the most common case. But what you kind of saw and what you're going to see shortly with Interaction Tracker opens up some really new scenarios. And so Interaction Tracker is this thing that we're really, really, really proud about. It is this entity that can control every aspect of the look and feel of your scrolling, your panning, your pinch and zoom kind of operations, and give you custom user experiences or make that possible for you. And it has a couple additional supporting features like source modifiers that help you create this bounce-like effect that is useful in pull-to-refresh kind of scenarios. It has position trackers, which Reveal happens to use because that's how we bind the position of the mouse or the position of the pen or the finger and then have animations react to it. So lights react to the position of input. And this is all, again, happening real time thanks to our real-time effects system, a real-time lighting system. Right? Now, we're building the next generation XAML scroller using the same technology. And you know, we can't wait to have you guys have your hands on the new scrollers. Now, patterns like parallax, conscious headers, pull to refresh, you know, Paul and James talked about it. These are a real thing today. They're going to be in builds, in insider builds shortly. What we're also excited about is this notion of physics. Is, you know, from the simple side of having springs, bounces, attraction, and these sorts of physical artifacts be a fundamental part of the design language, as well as in how our controls behave when you interact with them, and also as building blocks that you yourselves can use with the interaction tracker. And then as we go into the future, we're also looking at how physics engines can integrate into your applications. So let's do a really quick demo of interaction tracker. Now, this, as you noticed in the previous slide, is more in the realm of the possible, not in the realm of the easy. The scroller will make this easy. Inbox controls will make this easy. This is you're not seeing the slide deck. So what we'll do is go back to our application. And what I want to show is a finished scenario for you, right? So you can appreciate why this is useful. So the grid view on the home page that shows you each of those podcasts in there will be the subject of some cool things we do with the interaction tracker. So this is interaction tracker working for you behind the scenes. Now, this is interaction tracker working for you intentionally because you wired it to behave this way. Now, this is an example of content that could be revealed to the user upon an interaction and could be dismissed. Right, let's look at how that is wired. So what I've done in this application is written quite a little bit of code with the interaction tracker to make it do what you just saw on screen. So I'm going to create an interaction tracker. I'm going to start tracking and feed it with information that is critical for it to know, namely the target where the interaction tracker should capture input, the bounds in which it should capture input, and some rules as to how that input should be processed. So when I was running the application, I'm going to try that again, you notice that if I didn't pan very high, then the interaction tracker acted like it should just bounce back to its resting state. But when I panned after a certain threshold, it went and snapped to the top, right? And these are rules that you can play with, and these are snap points that you can play with. So let's see that there versus that versus that, right? So let's quickly look at the code here. There's two interesting things happening. One is a set of animations. So we're tracking, the interaction tracker is feeding us the position of input on a per frame basis. And then that is the source for all of our animations. So based on the position, we're doing some math and essentially applying a factor to the offset, the Y offset for the foreground visual. And you're seeing a subtle shadow behind, and we're applying the same offset to it as well. And then for the background visual, this is the one that reveals itself with text and ratings content to you. We're applying a different set of animations. That's pretty much it.
Awesome. So interaction tracker is one of those lower level concepts that's very, very powerful, and right now, as Ashish said, is in the possible realm. So the last concept around animations is what we're calling semantic animations. So in the connected animations scenario, we saw that we had a source page that had this type of view. And we had a destination page that had this element. Now, while the connected animation scenario we believe was easy, it's still, we don't even think that you should have to write those four lines of code. We want you to be able to more declaratively define the relationship and the contract between these elements. So we're looking to improve even that simple scenario, even by default and a little bit easier, by being able for you to declaratively write zero behind the scenes code in C#, and be able to create a partnership using attached properties in XAML to say, I want to create a unique ID here on the source page, and you'll use that same unique ID on the destination page, and that's it. And the framework just does all the magic for you in the navigation. You don't have to do
anything.
That's
pretty cool. Yeah.
We want to take that a step further as well. So as you saw that all the lines of code that Ashish had to do to actually set up those implicit animations for when they'll come in and when they'll hide, we still think that's too much. Do you agree? Yes. Okay. So we want to take that a step further. And so with the notion of what we're calling behaviors and triggers, not to be confused with markup behaviors and triggers, but just conceptually, we think of behaviors like behaviors act upon triggers. So fade out as a behavior acting upon when something exits or enters. And so this is the type of markup that we're exploring right now. So we can define an animation on the page and saying, hey, I want you to fade out on exit, basically, over this duration. Or if you look on the destination, I want you to slide in on entrance on these type of things, whether it's on the grid and the individual items with a staggered delay. And so we're calling these semantic animations. And no, fade out, exit, slide in, entrance aren't the only things that exist. We believe we'll provide a rich animation library of things for you to choose from. But those are basically just definitions of all the power that you've seen when you write the code with things like expression animations and stuff. So if you have a cool, fancy, we have one in Office that's called Shotgun to Pillow is the animation. You can create Shotgun to Pillow and put all your definitions and timing and all the aspects there. So semantic animations is one of the future investments that we're making around these kind of concepts of behaviors and driven off of triggers. And we want you to be a part of that conversation as well.
Let's speed through the...
Yeah. So all of these things are not possible without using the controls. And so we've talked a little bit about all the kind of bare bones. Let's talk about what we're doing in the UI platform. And we'll move a little bit quickly through here. So we all know that we love controls. Now, we think of controls in three different buckets. We need the building blocks, the core foundational pieces that deliver the core consistency from the platform. And everything's built upon these. Next, we think about patterns. Things are like parallax and pull to refresh and those type of things. And we want to make sure that those are built upon very consistent interactions and timings and curves, and they're multi-input aware that you've seen. But finally, we encapsulate all of these in the default controls. And we've seen a couple of them already. So we're introducing in the Fall Creators Update parallax view. And we already saw how simple that was to use. We're also introducing support for pull to refresh by being able to use simple wrappers around anything that's scrollable using a refresh container, and you'll automatically get pull to refresh capabilities. Of course, if you don't like the default UI, you can add a refresh visualizer to make your spaceship rocket go in the sky on pull to refresh if you want to do that. As James also showed, we're doing swipe actions using the swipe container and being able to put that around any element and be able to configure that. I'm gonna skip over this real quick so I can go through these and make sure I highlight these. We're also implementing hierarchical data support in a tree view control. This is kind of a first iteration of the tree view control. It's similar to what we've had in preview in the samples gallery for quite some time, and it's what Edge uses actually in their favorites. So now that capability is available to you in a productized form. Menus and dialogues are really important for developers as well. And so we think about, we've enhanced the content dialog to make sure that you can be able to set default actions as your users come in and not have to retemplate in order to give that capability, and also more options of how many actions you can choose. In addition, we've introduced the concept of what we call a context flyout, so that you don't have to write all the wire up code of right click, shift F10, mouse, or pen barrel, gaze, whatever that is for a right click, or the gamepad that James showed. By attaching a flyout as a contact flyout, we do all of that work for you. And we haven't left out keyboard users as well. By simply putting an access key on a UI element, you'll now get keytips that are by default for free with a built-in look and style that's theme aware, and that will actually invoke the default action on things like a button right here. So if I hit Alt-G, the button would default invoke there. Yeah, keyboard. And as Ashish alluded to a little bit, we have a ratings control, not just a static one, but it's a playful, interactive one that works well with mouse and touch, and has some good animations with it as well. And yes, we have a color picker now as well for you to choose from. One of the other things that we've heard loud and clear too is repeated UI scenarios can be difficult. And we try to embody a lot of our experience and our design within things like list view and grid view. But when those don't meet your needs and you try to break out of those, they can be complex. We've heard that feedback. You can't create your own virtualized lists and things. So we're looking at new ways of addressing repeatable UI. And this is a future investment that we're looking at. We'll come in a future flight for you to start trying on. We're calling it Repeater. And we think of Repeater as basically just a data-driven panel. A repeater is just aware of a bunch of UI elements that it just stamps out, and you attach services to it. So a layout is a service. It's not a control anymore. You just have a repeater and say, I want these items to be laid out as a stack layout. And maybe as the window gets smaller, you want them as a flow layout. So you just tell the repeater, here's a new attached layout. And rather than destroying and recreating elements or forcing you to switch controls, we will do all the work for you in an optimized manner. So the last section we want to talk about is scaling. And we think about scaling as scaling up and also scaling out. Performance to us is just as much a UX feature as the UI that users interact with. And we really take this seriously. When the shell itself is built on our platforms, we have to take this seriously. And we know that the responsibility is on the framework at every one of those three levels to deliver great performance.
Right.
But you, as a custom app author, also need to make sure that you're taking those things under consideration as well. So we have some tips to make sure that you things that you should think about. First, we want you to respect the user. There's different user settings within the shell that you need to, when you're developing custom UIs, that you should honor to the user. So maybe if they decided they don't want animations on, you should probably not play those animations. These are things that help your users build confidence in your applications. We've already talked about how acrylic is limited background UI when the alt tab happens, and we want to conserve battery life. So again, if you're using common controls, all of these capabilities are things that we've thought very, very deeply about and are built in for you. Some new features, and actually we've been seeing it in our demo, right? Every time we hit F5, what's the first thing we see? That splash screen. We've heard that you think that you can be faster than the splash screen. Awesome. Let's challenge you. So currently, right now, you set a static asset for your splash screen. We're going to give you the ability to opt out of that splash screen so you can dictate what content your users see fast. This is an evolution of the extended splash screen capabilities. You'll have a time that you'll be able to present your screen. Yeah, thanks. We also want you to respect the device. And Paul talked about this. We want you to respect power conditions and battery saver mode and network conditions and memory conditions. Who wants to be on this list at the top of the sort? Nobody. If you can guess who the first one is, Outlook. And then we've done some features to help you as the app developer, too. How many in this room are lazy XAML developers that use visibility collapsed every time to hide the UI that your users don't see? Every hand should be coming up. I've seen the telemetry. I've seen the code. Everyone's hand should be up. In fact, one of our demos had it, too. I just noticed.
Yeah.
So we see this all the time, visibility collapse to hide UI that may not be shown. That is not actually saving anything from being created on the screen. Time is still being taken to create those elements on the screen. So we're adding a new capability for you to basically defer UI creation in a bindable way, a binary kind of way. So you can say, hey, I want to declare that this is deferred UI. So if you set xload to true, and somewhere, maybe in your data model, it changes, property notification changes, and now the xload goes to false, we will then create that UI and display it for you. So it allows your content to be able to only be created when you're there. Now, we will give you proxy objects so that you can still code against the object model that you have, but we're not actually creating all those UI elements. The last thing is that you, as a developer, have the tools and capabilities to be able to understand these things yourself. We really have greatly increased Visual Studio's performance capabilities here, and so use these tools. And we have the UI diagnostic tool. If you turn it on, it will show you violations such as the one that I just talked about collapse, and give you information of how you can get to it. David Lee has an in-depth demonstration of a lot of these capabilities. The last section we want to talk about is tailoring UI. Now, we've talked a lot about this in the past of making sure that you tailor your UI experience across mobile, console, desktop, HoloLens. We've heard about that. That message still rings true. But we also want to make sure that you understand tailoring to your user experience. Let's take a look at this video from Bullclip, which is an enterprise application. They actually have a theater session. I encourage you to go talk with them. Now, this is a project management application. And look at the job that they've done. Small attention to detail, embodying a lot of the Fluent Design System UI capabilities in an application that traditionally can be a battleship kind of gray experience. So now we realize that not everybody has the capability to start in a greenfield way. We know that people have existing Win32 applications, such as Windows Forms and WPF. And we want to help you bring those to the modern world. So one of the investments we're making is enabling modern UI in Win32. You've heard of the Desktop Bridge or Project Centennial, where you have the capability to package your application as an AppX and be able to use more and more of the WinRT surface area. We're looking to extend that bridge to now include XAML and the UI platform as well. So you can start making incremental improvements to your application, and eventually you can get to the place, if it makes sense, you can get to a place where your app can be universal and run everywhere. This is an example.
Yeah. I would hold your applause for another 30 seconds. Yep. You're going to see something really cool here. Go ahead.
This is an example of what we've done to kind of do this. This is something that our developers just had fun with. Maybe not a real one, but we had fun doing it. So we took 7-Zip, which is an open source hardcore Win32 application, like Win32, not like Windows Forms or anything. And we decided, what can we do using some of these concepts in probably a little bit of a gratuitous manner?
Right.
But let's prove the point. So here's Win32. It's an open source C++ application. Let's see what our developers did with it here. So as they click copy, now we're using the effects system to blur the background, add shadows to the HWin. And you can see it's not a bitmap. There's interactiveness there. And so we've taken a Win32 application and added some of what you've seen in the Windows UI platform. And these are the type of things that we want you to be able to do in a purposeful manner. Right. Maybe this isn't purposeful.
But, yeah, it isn't.
But it is awesome.
Well, it is cool, isn't it?
Yes.
Come on. Yeah.
So Mike Batista has a session, I think it's tomorrow,
yes.
Talking about modernizing Windows Forms and WPF applications that will touch on this concept, but also other concepts along the desktop bridge. This also is an area we want your feedback and understanding the scenarios where this will be valuable to you, so please participate in the conversation there. Lastly, we know that you want to create mobile applications, and mobile brings different user experiences. Now, at Microsoft, we believe, as a .NET developer, the way to create mobile applications is using Xamarin. Our story isn't changing there. But what we have heard is that I speak English, and if some of you may suffer from the disease that my friend James speaks, which is some other English, and we've heard that, hey, these two chunks of XAML basically produce the same UI, what can we do? And so you've heard in the keynote today, hopefully you heard in the keynote today, that we're starting along a journey of defining XAML Standard 1.0. This is an example of an implementation of XAML Standard built on top of Xamarin, running on Visual Studio for Mac, running on the Mac, obviously, and using the standard definition of currently the draft spec form.
It's pretty cool.
So we think this is, like I said, this is a journey for us to define the standard, but we're hopeful that we'll be able to address your feedback there. And we're doing this in the open. So we want your feedback. We're in the design phase. We want you to help design it with us and give us your feedback and participate in the proposals and submit new proposals. You, our customers, will ultimately tell us what you want. But that's not it, of course. We're getting the red light even, but let's tell you a lot of other things that we've done in the platform. .NET Standard 2 support is here. It's coming. We want to know the scenarios that you need to support in XAML. Are you using data tables? Do you want them to be able to be bindable? Those type of things we want to know. Some of your favorites may be on this list that are coming in a flight to you as a XAML developer. Custom markup extensions, default binding modes for XBind, a ton of investments in the tech stack for you to be able to measure and interact with text as well, and some tooling improvements as well.
And we've asked ourselves, what if we could take an existing XAML application that had implicit inherent depth in it? Because you know, you lay content over each other, and there's an implicit Z order ingrained into these applications. What if you could take that exact same application without changing any line of code, with just the framework doing the heavy lifting for you? If you use that application in a HoloLens or an HMD device tethered to your Windows PC, if there were perceptible depth to the end user, if there were perceptible volume to the end user, would that be great? And so we're really, really, really proud of some stuff that we're working on now that we'll see light in successive Windows releases around this this space.
So we want you to help us define what's needed in the next generation of the Windows UI platform. We're actively involved in various areas, and we want to hear from you too. On Twitter, you can reach us at Windows UI. In fact, we love that people like Justin Liu and Rudy have shared their creations, what they're doing with our platform. We want more of you to do that. We get inspired daily by seeing the visuals that people are creating. And so we absolutely want to hear from you. We want to see more of that. If you have feature suggestions, use our user voice. And always check out our GitHub location, where we have all our samples and kind of where our labs things are going to be working on. Okay. I'll let the next slide read for itself. It's the related sessions that we have there. We are definitely out of time. I was going to show the demo of how to do pull to refresh. I'm happy to stick around for the next 15 minutes until I get kicked off by the next presenter to show that. But I really appreciate you guys sticking around for us, and we're really excited to see what you create with our platform. And again, please tell us what you need, what's right, what's wrong, and please help us be inspired by what you create.
And come down to our booth.
Come down to the booth afterwards. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for sticking with us.